This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
IGN GameScoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. This is Greg Miller.
Hey!
This is Anthony Gallegos. This is Justin Davis.
Rap.
Call him JD.
No, that's not.
Or Justice Dolphin. I saw a pretty amazing rendition, an artist's rendition of Justice Dolphin.
It's my favorite thing. The podcast that I'm on regularly is not big, but it's getting big enough that the Photoshops are starting
to happen. Tech
fetish. Yeah.
Every Friday? Okay, I was going to say Friday.
And the Photoshops are my new favorite thing.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
So this is a pretty big week for the video games.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, you don't.
I just like the way you said it. The video games. That's good.
You got Dishonored. You got XCOM. You got Walking Dead, Episode 4.
Yeah.
All coming out this week.
Yeah. All best on PC.
Oh, get out of here! XCOM's great on PS3. I'm playing it.
No, it is actually. XCOM's perfectly fine on all consoles, but
I don't know. I can't decide what order to play these games in.
Walking Dead first, because you can get through it the fastest.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, I got my copy of XCOM last week, and I actually was mad, because I wanted to try to get through Borderlands 2, finally finished Borderlands 2 XCOM. This weekend, and I started playing XCOM instead.
Yeah.
Then I'm jumping back to Borderlands, trying to beat everything, you know, and now it's just like, I'm going to have to put Borderlands aside, because I want to play more XCOM.
You have to shelf it.
Yeah.
So you've been playing XCOM.
I haven't.
XCOM. Give us your impressions. Our review is up now.
Yeah.
It is.
I really
8.2?
8.2.
Which is great. Some people are upset about that.
Yeah, story, I'd say 7 missions in, somewhere in there, and I think an 8.2 is totally fair. It's a great game. I really love playing it, but it does have, like, there's a barrier to entry to it. It is very complicated. There's a lot of things going on, and then there's, like...
You think those are the knocks against it?
I mean, I haven't read Steve's review yet. Those are some of my reviews. Like, mine's on, like, a presentation front. It's not like, you know...
Some
like,
people wish it was more complicated.
That was part of his criticism. He really liked the story and the character development, and he thought it could be a little bit more hardcore for the hardcore XCOM fans.
Sure, but that's what they've been trying to balance with this whole thing.
Right, that's what, like, I haven't played XCOM yet, but the impression I get is that that's a game that they're really going to have a hard time winning with people, like, because it's never going to be as hardcore as the old games were, which were bananas, but it's also going to be, like, a lot more complicated and complex than most games that come out today.
So
people think that they do it because they're trying to develop for consoles. I don't think that's the case at all. I think, if anything, they're just trying to develop it for an audience in 2012.
Exactly. Like, they're looking for a mainstream audience.
Versus 1994.
Yeah.
Like, I have positive memories of the old XCOMs, but I bought them on Steam and went back and played them, you know, within the last year or so. Those games are mean. Like, they are really mean to the player, and they don't explain anything. And, like, you will lose the first mission easily.
People, like, should be happy to get... should just be happy to get an XCOM game ever again.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, they're like, oh, I can't believe they're trying to do all these things to turn it into something where they can make money, which, first of all, they're a business. But second of all, it's like, you know, they did not have to ever make XCOM again. There was no reason. If they did, it could have been a shooter. They didn't need to make it a strategy.
They're trying.
Yeah. Like, well, right, but I'm saying as a publisher to do this, it shows that they're willing to take a great risk on
sure.
it.
Sure.
And anyone that thinks that Firaxis doesn't like love the old game or love turn-based XCOM is just insane.
Yeah, it's crazy that it's here now, because wasn't this XCOM just announced early this year?
Yeah.
Because up until then, we were expecting XCOM, this first-person shooter, was supposed to be coming out.
And yeah, possibly third.
Yeah, who knows what's going on with that? But like, yeah, this was just announced. Like they,
I think. Yeah, and I won a bet against you, didn't I, about this? That this one would be out before the first-person shooter.
Yeah,
that's funny. Good old GameScoop.
Yeah, as a big fan of turn-based strategy games, I just think it's awesome that there's a big high-profile turn-based strategy game coming to consoles to retail.
That's another thing. Like, when was the last time we had a big? It's $60, right? Full price, a big $60 turn-based strategy experience. I can't.
Valkyria?
Even remember. Like,
Valkyria Chronicles?
Yeah.
And this is definitely better than that.
Yeah, and I love,
this might be fighting words for Greg Miller, I don't know.
No, there was no trophies in Valkyria Chronicles. But that's like part of what I'm drawing from, right? Is like, for me, you know, I played PC games a little bit back in the day, Men in Black, of course. So for me, you know, not having the XCOM PC experience or whatever, Valkyria was my turn-based, like, you know, thing. That's where I've played more Valkyria Chronicles, more hours of Valkyria turn-based than any other turn-based game I've ever played.
You didn't have a PlayStation?
I did.
You didn't play that Final Fantasy Tactics?
No. Final Fantasy, come on. What am I, Ryan Clements? I got things to do. I got girls
battle,
to meet.
Advance Wars.
Yeah. Advance Wars I played. See, what I'm not saying I never played a turn-based. I'm saying Valkyria was really the one that I sunk hours and hours and hours
XCOM
into.
XCOM has those same gameplay elements in a much cooler world.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I'm down with that. But what I'm saying is that it I think Valkyria leads you in a little bit better. Whereas XCOM, it was like a few tutorial missions, then it was like all the stuff.
Oh, yeah, XCOM, I think.
And
I
that's
feel
what
like,
I was saying about how
like
it was more
complicated. They expect you to lose.
Oh yeah. Well, that was the thing. Like, and that's the thing. Like, you get to name your characters, and then there's permanent death or whatever. But
I
named my first round of characters. I'm like Mike Mitchell, my roommate, and Colin Campbell, because this guy's from Britain. Yada, and those guys are just getting massacred out there. I'm like, damn. Like, I had all these like delusions of grandeur that my Hulk Hogan was gonna be with me forever and ever, dead two missions in. You know what I mean?
You can make a really good Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. You got the handlebar mustache. Yeah. Yeah.
I gotta get on XCOM.
Yeah.
I love turn-based strategy. I had an Advance Wars fan site in 2002.
Nice.
It's still on the web. That was before I was doing
Advance Wars. What's the traffic like too?
Well, there's no Advance Wars games anymore. Like, when an Advance Wars game comes out, the traffic spikes significantly. AdvanceWarsNet.com. And it's still on the web. And that was little Justin Davis in high school making websites. And
Advance Wars is great.
That's pretty good. Now, Justin, you've been playing Dishonored.
Yeah, I have.
And
our
review for that is up, and we give it a 9.2, I want to say.
9.2, amazing, and it's getting those reviews all over the place. Lots and lots of 9s and 10s.
So I'm really, really amped for this one. You have been enjoying it, but maybe not quite as much.
Sure, I am not. For me, it's not anywhere close to being a Game of the Year candidate. I definitely am enjoying it. If my personal review would be a 7-ish. I sort of have a problem with stealth games in general. I feel like stealth games are great until you get discovered. Then they kind of fall apart. And I've always kind of felt that way. Like, that's when you see sort of seams in the AI, or, you know, it's not that fun. Like, you just want to restart the mission again, and you got to go through what you already did. And it's fun to be all creepy and stealthy once, but if you have to do that a second time or do that a third time because you made a mistake, then you kind of just want to rush through it, and then you sort of get caught in this spiral of being discovered a lot.
I will say Dishonored, though, offers you chances to be stealthy if you want, and then you can be like a weird mix of stealthy and like a murderer.
Yeah.
Like, they encourage you to be like the guy that appears, kills, like, there's a part in Cam's video review actually that showcases it really well, where he kills a guy and then purposely throws his body over a balcony to shock everyone, which is like something you can do. You can do that to distract everyone, and then you're like, now I'm out.
Yeah, there's a few things that I do really, really like about it, and that it does stealth a little bit differently than other games. And one thing that I love is when you get discovered, that's not necessarily game over, like in Splinter Cell. Like, you can run and hide. And, like, the guards will, like, they're persistent, but, like, being discovered isn't, like, the end of the mission. Like, you can just run, and they'll chase you. Like, I swam underwater for a while, and, like, then they couldn't find me anymore. And I thought that was cool that, like, you're not just stuck in some alarm state, like, forever. Like,
I think that one thing, though, like, if I had to level one criticism against it that is, like, the most glaring to me is that it has no way of telling you if you're actually hidden.
Yep.
Like, that is, like, the number one thing. Like, Skyrim does it with, like, an eyeball to tell you, and it tells you, like, with the line over if you're not hidden. Like, other games, like Splinter Cell is a great example where it goes black and white when you're actually in the shadows and hidden. This game, no indication if you're hidden.
That's
at all
weird.
Or
that's
not.
Weird. For
you'll be in a shadow, and the guy, and then you'll be seen. You're like, I thought I was hidden. Nah, you weren't.
Yeah, guards have an indication when they see you. Like, you'll see the little thing. The
exactly,
bar
but you don't
head.
Have a
yeah.
thing telling but, you like right now you are unseen. You cannot be seen.
Like, and like sometimes like there doesn't seem to be too much rhyme or reason. Like you have this ability to like teleport short distances, and sometimes they'll like see you make that hop, and sometimes they might not. Like it's really just kind of the luck of the draw whether you're going to escape. The other thing that I really do like about the game is I feel like it strikes the perfect balance between the guards being persistent. Like in Splinter Cell, they will literally leap across rooftops and chase you. Like they're relentless, and it's sort of like, it's like, oh, you got seen, and then you got to run halfway across the city to finally get hidden again. And then other games, like in Skyrim, you can literally shoot a dude in the face with an arrow, and then he'll be like, oh. Must have been the wind.
Yeah, this game, it's like they have limits. It's like if you go up on top of a building, they're like, well, can't do that.
And so they strike a good balance between being really persistent and dangerous, like you don't want to be caught, but it's not like super annoying where you got to spend 10 minutes trying to escape. So I like that balance. They struck a lot.
The IGN review recommends Dishonored if you enjoy Deus Ex and Bioshock. Do you agree with those recommendations?
I agree with that, and I think it's like I was talking with Mitch Dyer, another one of our editors, last night, and he thought it was funny how everyone's talking about how refreshing this game is and how there's really nothing else like it. And he's like, Deus Ex came out like a year ago, and it is a lot like Deus Ex, like Human Revolution. So it's like it is refreshing, and that there aren't that many games that are like this. But Deus Ex was doing a lot of the same
thing. I like Bioshock, and I didn't like Deus Ex. So what do I do? What do I do?
Well, I think they mean it's like Deus Ex in the sense that like here are some tools. Figure out how you're going to go in there and handle
it. So it's not like I have a lame battery that makes me not do cool things. No. Got it.
And no. I would say, in my opinion, Dishonored is probably more open than Deus Ex.
Yeah, I liked Deus Ex a lot, but it seems like there's like three ways to do every objective, and
they're like,
that's
this game's so open, you can do whatever you want. Yeah, you can crawl through this human-sized vent, or you can hack this door, or you can kill dudes.
Yeah,
those are your three.
That's kind of it.
And so this feels more
I did enjoy it though. So.
This feels more like a proper sandbox. Like you can literally like go all the way around and go in the back door, like do whatever.
Yeah, back door.
People compare it to Bioshock mostly because of the aesthetic. Like it has a very Bioshock aesthetic, and like you find food all over the place and eat it just like you do in Bioshock.
I like
a blue
food.
Potion and a red potion.
Just like Cookie Monster to shove
in
stuff.
There is a blue potion and a red potion.
Yeah,
I actually hadn't made that.
Aesthetically, it looks very like much like Bioshock.
That's
even
cool.
The character design.
And you find audio logs, and that gives you background about the world.
The complaints I'm hearing are actually with the story and the character development.
Yeah, I mean, I don't play for the story actually at all. Like Corvo's a mute, and so he's actually not the most interesting character. Yeah. But
I don't understand the decision to make him silent.
But
the protagonist you play as.
Yeah. But like to me, it's like I'm not playing for the story as much as I am just for the fun of seeing how to go through a mission, like figuring out if I'm going to be able to do it silently or if I get caught, how am I going to get out of this really crappy situation?
Another thing that I really liked about this game, and I don't want to give too many spoilers, but so it is mission based. You do mission 1, mission 2, mission 3, and within those missions, it sort of each is a huge sandbox. And decisions you make in each mission changes the game in like significant ways. And lots of games have a bullet on their back of their box that's like, oh, you can affect the world. And this, I feel like, handles that better than most. So I poisoned some dudes. I'll put it that way.
I killed a bunch of people too.
I poisoned some dudes, and then that affected me later in the game. Like I was doing a good thing, but then later it had like bad repercussions that I hadn't thought too much about.
Like if you kill a bunch of people, for instance. A bunch of like zombie-like creatures will appear throughout the level.
Later.
And so then you'll have to deal with that.
Yeah.
And so like there was like one situation I ran into where a hidden side objective was like save these two people, if you can from the guards, because these guards are gonna beat them up and probably kill them.
Yeah.
But I had spawned so many zombies and the zombies were chasing me that when I ran to them, the zombies just ate them all. And I was like, well, guards and the people alike are all dead now because of me killing people like a badass so much earlier. Like you are definitely encouraged to not kill people if you can, if it's not necessary.
That's cool.
I guess I don't have like a tick box of reasons, like these are the six reasons that it's not a 9.2 on the Justin Davis scale. It's more like games don't start at a 10 and lose points for the things they do wrong. They start neutral and they gain points for being awesome. And the game just seems sort of, first person stealth action. I don't know, I just don't dig it as much as other people, I don't think.
I'm excited for it. Greg, you should play too.
Okay. You wanna play co-op?
Is there co-op?
No, there's no co-op.
There's all of a sudden lots of good stealth stuff coming out, it seems like, because there's Dishonored, there was Mark of the Ninja, which you guys should all play if you haven't played that yet, and then a new Hitman's coming out soon.
Ooh, yeah, I was going to say, Dishonored, I would say, has more in common with Hitman than any other game people have compared it to.
I know you're a Hitman fan.
I am.
But now this new Hitman has has received some criticism. Maybe it's the marketing of the new Hitman. So I'm wondering if you're as excited.
Yeah, so when
for
I saw a Hitman demo, I was like, oh, it seemed like ridiculously linear, like there was only one way to get through it, which is like the antithesis of what Hitman's always been about. But then I've heard that other demos of Hitman since then have made it seem like it is classic Hitman, where it's like, here's a box, figure out how
I played a bunch of Hitman back in the day on the PS2. I liked what I saw at E3 when I got to sit down and play it, where it was, like it was the Chinatown one or whatever, where there's the guy in the middle of the area. Yeah, you can poison his fish, you can drop a car
on
him,
you can do this. That's classic Hitman. You can learn a pattern, and through his pattern you'll see there's like 8 different places where you could take him out as benignly as strangling him.
Yeah.
Or you could
dress up as a delivery guy and blow him up.
Yeah, or as a bunch of poison food. I mean, marketing-wise, they've done some missteps that probably harm them with a very small vocal minority of the community.
Sure, yeah. Okay.
And then, but overall, like, it's still going to be probably one of my most anticipated games of next year.
Of next year?
Isn't it
out in November?
Is it out in November?
Yeah.
That's not
that crazy.
Say,
I thought it got delayed.
November 20th.
Wow.
Yep. I thought I got delayed. See
going up against the Wii U, huh?
Well, it should be delayed. No, not because it's not a bad game, not because it's not a good game, but because it's like,
so much
because
stuff,
you just said like a Wii U, Halo's going to be out.
Yeah,
like,
but I mean, that's All Stars Day too.
At this point,
right?
This fall's more open than next spring. Like, it's just things are getting bananas all the time. So
things lighten up after Assassin's Creed. There's like not as many. You know, you still have Halo and you still have the Wii U launch. But
yeah, I'm just saying. Well, I'm just saying November in particular is just so bad that I just feel like that's a tough month for a game like Hitman.
That's always a weird time to put it out too. PlayStation All Stars is doing the same thing coming up. Then it's like the whole point is to get it out by Black Friday, but still
and get it out for Christmas sales. I get that. But
I think you're doing yourself a disservice by putting it out. That's why October is where everybody tries to get to, right?
Yep.
Because the hype builds, kids see the things, they put it on their Christmas list. Mom and dad buy it. I don't know how many kids are.
Yeah, but even if you release a game in like January, people have Christmas money to go out and buy things with. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a gamble. Like, you don't really know. Like, remember the Mercenaries franchise is a weird reference, but, like, going back to the PS2, that game was sort of, you know, not a new license, not a new anything. That game launched in January, and that's how it became this big success.
Yeah, like so did Resident Evil 4, so did Mass Effect 2. Like, there's been other games that have released in January and done okay. Yeah. Now, granted, those two franchises are definitely bigger than something like Hitman, but I still feel like Hitman could be, like, a surprise beginning of the year release rather than, like, a lost in the shuffle of November release.
Sure. Well, then also this week is episode 4 of The Walking Dead.
Yes.
I know you cannot say a lot of specifics, but you have played it, right?
Correct.
You've beaten it.
Yes.
All right.
Twice.
And your review will be up Tuesday.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that'll be up.
And that's all he can say.
The
iOS version is lagging behind if anybody's playing it on mobile.
There was a recent, a very interesting iOS development over the weekend that came up, and it involves your beat and something that's very important to Anthony. This is Angry Birds and Star Wars coming together, joining forces. Angry Birds, Star Wars, Star Wars, Angry Birds. Well, who gets top billing there?
In the Angry Birds, Star Wars.
Oh, really?
Angry Birds, Star Wars, no colon, just one.
Sign of the times.
Yeah.
What's it about?
It's going to be a game
and a
line of merchandise.
Well, that's not surprising.
Yeah, they're going absolutely bananas with it. They're doing a whole, so it is a game coming out November 8th, and it's going to be sort of traditional Angry Birds sort of flinging style, and it's going to have the gravity mechanics from Angry Birds Space. And each of the birds has been redone as a different Star Wars character. So the red bird is Luke Skywalker, and the three birds are Princess Leia, and so on and so forth. And they're having a giant line of toys come along with it. They have over 50 licenses for t-shirts and board games.
Yeah, it'll be a billion-dollar franchise by like this time next year for
is
sure.
Is it not already?
Well, but I'm saying Star Wars Angry Birds specifically will be like
$1 billion
franchise.
They are going to make $1 billion.
Those are two of the biggest licenses in the world.
Yeah, this is what I was saying. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, Star Wars is dead to me now, and I can't believe they would do this. And what I think some of those folks don't understand that are maybe really into the extended universe and reading the books and this and that is that Star Wars has always been huge with little kids.
There's a reason that these older people liked it, because they were kids when they saw it, too. It's just that... I mean, even if you watch things like Clone Wars and stuff now, which is largely geared towards children, it's like, that's an awesome show, even if you're an adult Star Wars fan.
Part of it is because we had Empire Strikes Back, which is really the only one that was really, you know, that dealt with any sort of, like, mature themes.
Yeah, sure.
That seems hardcore.
I mean, Star Wars is almost like two franchises now. Like, there are all these novels, like, really, really good, like, genuinely good sci-fi novels that just happen to be set in the Star Wars universe, and that's obviously, you know, for adults. But, like, the cartoon and the toys, and, like, there's little kids that dress up as Darth Vader that might not even know that much about who Darth Vader is for Halloween. that's almost like a whole separate deal. And so, you know, my wife teaches kindergarten, and her kids are obsessed with Star Wars, obsessed with Angry Birds, all the Angry Birds backpacks and shirts. So the two coming together, their little heads are going to explode. It's going to be crazy.
It's going to be really big.
I want to play the game. I'm not interested in any of the toys. No. I'm sure Justin will get some of them sent to me, like, and it'll be really dumb.
Some of the toys do look really clever. Like, it's just this weird mixture of brands. They have Angry Birds Star Wars version of Jenga coming out. But the Jenga tower is a Death Star, but then the Death Star is a pig's head.
Like, and then you fling the birds. So what does this have to do with Jenga?
Exactly. It's just this crazy mixture of, like, so it seems like very convoluted and weird, but it also, like, totally makes sense. You're like, yeah, I want that Jenga set. I want it.
Anthony doesn't.
And Anthony's shaking his head.
I don't. I have enough. I at this point, it takes something very special to make me want something Star Wars, even though I'm a huge fan. I just have too much stuff. I'm actually getting rid of all my Star Wars 1996 Collector's Edition 12-inch figures. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
eBay?
Yeah, they're just sitting in my closet. I feel it feels really dumb.
You know, and you're going to be listening to the Angry Birds Star Wars audiobooks when they come out.
The Redbirds attacked with no mercy. Our hawk defenses could not keep up.
You guys have a low standard of Star Wars audiobook. They're amazing.
Yeah. I know. You wrecked another wooden wall with a glass wall outside of it.
I did just finish the very last currently for sale Star Wars non-abridged audiobook, so I have no more. So go on iTunes and look how many there are and how much money that is. I bought all that.
What are you going to do now?
I don't re-listen to them.
Do we need to put you on, like, Suicide Watch?
Read real books? I don't want to do that, though. Who has time for that? Ain't nobody got time for that.
Ain't nobody got time for that. I got bronchitis. They just put out Bad Piggies.
Yeah.
Rovio did.
Yeah, that game's really
And
good
I would
too.
Think maybe that they'd, like, rest for a little bit, but now they just announced
no rest
something
for the wicked.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they wanted to, but I imagine the people at LucasArts were like, well, your guys are back in the news, you're hot. Yeah. It's rolled out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anybody's super upset about this news or butthurt about it, you know, my final word would be, you know, Star Wars and Angry Birds are both for little kids. And Star Wars can work for adults, but it's... you know, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, 8-year-olds is going to be awesome for them. Like, it's sort of the dream mashup that, like, when you were a little kid, the two things you were really into, you wished would come together.
It'd be like Mario and Star Wars coming together when you were kids.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there are Star Wars Transformers. There are all kinds of dumb
Star
Wars. Yeah. They're Transformers that transform between, like, a Darth Vader figure into, like, a flying jet.
That's really cool, too.
What's the alt history on that? What's the
audio? No, there is none. It's just really silly and dumb.
When the Emperor
rebuilt Anakin. But that being said, you know, like George Lucas's inspiration for stuff like Star Wars was things like Buck Rogers and stuff, which was also a sci-fi show very much geared for children, you know, and to sell toys. So, most of your fond stuff was made to be crap to sell you toys.
Oh, yeah.
Get over it.
Yeah, totally.
Angry Birds Star Wars is out November 8th?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the crazy part of it.
I know, right?
Yeah, all those palette swaps they had to do. Whew. It must have been so intense.
They made a pig head.
The thing about Angry Birds is that it keeps getting better, though.
You really liked Bad Piggies.
I really liked Bad Piggies, and Angry Birds Space was better than the first three Angry Birds games.
That's true.
And, like, so they keep everything they do, like, the quality of those games is increasing, and they're becoming, like, sort of genuine sort of puzzles that you have to solve instead of just, like, you know, time-wasting, fling birds, and, you know, smash some stuff. They're actually, like, pretty clever now. So, you know, I'm excited to see what they do with this.
We made the reference to No Rest for the Wicked or whatever, because they're putting it right out after Bad Piggies. Do you think that's because Bad Piggies isn't Angry Birds Bad Piggies? It's kind of a way to say, hey, we have this other game out, too.
Yeah, I mean, so I think they had to get Star Wars out before Christmas, because they have literally, you know, hundreds and hundreds of toys. So the bigger question is, why release Bad Piggies? Why not sit on that for a while?
I wonder how that's done, too. They've made a statement.
It's done super
It's number
well.
One.
They made a statement that it was the fastest selling game. But, like,
a meaningless statement.
Yeah, what does that mean?
Fastest downloaded game scoop.
It didn't sell many copies, but those copies sold really fast. Like, yeah. I don't know what that means.
So Bad Piggies is, I don't expect that game to do as well as Angry Birds, even though it's a better game, because it is more complicated. Like, it's much more something for, like, proper gamers to sit. Like, they give you a level
proper
to solve.
Proper gamers.
They give you a level to solve. They say, here's these pieces you have at your disposal. You know, go. Then they turn you loose. Like, it's kind of hard and challenging in parts, much more so than Angry Birds ever was. So, you know, I think it's really cute, and I reviewed it really positively, but I don't expect it to become, you know, a $1 billion thing like Angry Birds.
I'll play Angry Birds Star Wars.
Yeah.
For sure.
I'm actually interested in that.
Can you imagine it's going to have the theme music, and then it's going to be remixed with the Angry Birds
Is
music?
It going to have the intro text?
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be insane.
Episode one. Duck 3PO, I don't know.
You don't know any Angry Birds. You never played Angry Birds.
The most eagerly awaited arcade game of the year, the brand new Star Wars. Sound familiar? Let's check out the action.
Justin, tell us the idea you were just explaining to us about your video game experiment.
Yes, I'm saying that in certain video games, it would be literally impossible to obey all the laws. And I'm thinking about in Grand Theft Auto, if you tap someone's bumper, that doesn't even register on the, that doesn't even earn you one star in GTA. But in real life, if you tap someone's bumper, oh, you gotta flag them over, you gotta pull over into the Safeway parking lot, and you gotta exchange insurance information.
But that's not fun. But video games are supposed to be fun.
Yeah, so it's like, this bump doesn't seem like, oh, you don't need to get the insurance, and then, oh, you're arguing with them about it. So that's the idea, is to just do a video on the absurdity of, you know, what playing Crazy Taxi would be like, or
GTA. Could there be a part, like, where, like, your character goes to get pizza in GTA, and he gets, like, way too much, and he just feels really sad the rest of the day?
Yeah.
He's just, like, super depressed from, like, his food regret?
Who are we talking about here?
I mean, just like just a guy that loves pizza.
Everybody knows that.
So
experience.
Your idea is to play video games, but obey all the real laws
right.
that we have. What does that mean for something like Call of Duty? Is it okay?
You need to
no killing.
You're a soldier, but you need to engage. Right? There's rules of engagement.
You may only fire when fired upon.
Right. Yeah. You may only fire when fired upon, and you need to identify your enemy first. Right. You know, there's no wild spraying of
You gotta ease up on the willy-nilly grenade throwing, too.
Right, no.
I mean, you never know who could be. Could be somebody in that house. That could be somebody's house.
It's
and you
true.
Just throw a grenade.
If
you,
we've all played GTA and been, like, shooting at somebody. Ah, like, there's smoke, there's jelly on your screen. Somebody's screaming in your ear, and then you're shooting, and you realize you've been shooting at your own teammate. Mm-hmm. And you're like, ooh.
Yeah.
And if that were real life, you would be court-martialed. You would go to jail.
My favorite part of Call of Duty is when you get court-martialed, locked up, and
so,
just sit there.
So you gonna do this? You gonna make this video?
Yeah, I think we'll probably do this video. I was also thinking about, like, half of GTA doesn't take place in a war zone. There's the favela level that's just in, like, Brazil. You're just in a town.
Call of Duty. You said GTA.
Oh, yeah. In Call of Duty.
I don't remember the favela level of GTA.
Yeah, the favela level.
What about when you go down to Rio de Janeiro?
What about, like, Mario Kart? Like, what are the rules between a dinosaur and a man?
Yeah.
Like, do you not throw banana peels?
Because
you're like,
littering,
that's not
Ryan.
Fair.
No, it's also littering.
It's littering?
Yeah.
What if the litter disappears after a certain amount of time?
After one lap.
That's true. I guess I don't know about the laws of the Mushroom Kingdom.
Okay, fair enough.
Anyway, let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Hi, listeners.
Hey.
This is Travis Ward. He has a question about XCOM, Enemy Unknown. Mitch, I know you're playing it.
I'm playing it. Love it.
Anybody else playing this game?
Mm-mm. Not yet.
Guys, come on.
I know. I've got plans to play this game.
Me too.
Some games have come out recently.
Playing Dishonored.
Really?
Yeah. I'm playing Borderlands 2. It's too much to play right now. Mm-hmm. I still want to beat Mark of the Ninja.
Man, me too.
Backlog.
Anyway, Travis says, really enjoy your show. Find you all hilarious, and your points and insights into gaming are incredibly valuable.
Thank you, Travis.
First, how important is it to the future of the increasingly outnumbered hardcore gamers for XCOM Enemy Unknown to have strong sales? First of all, let's dissect his question. Is that true, or are hardcore gamers
are
increasingly outnumbered?
I disagree with that completely.
Are people ganging up on us?
We got the MPD numbers yesterday, and the second best-selling game of the month was Borderlands 2, which is basically an RPG.
Well, it's kind of outnumbered by
number
War,
one was Madden.
Yeah,
it's totally true that. I think I don't know that I would use the term outnumbered, but it's true that it's hard for hardcore gamers to get the games that they want. There's less and less of them being made. That's what I would agree with.
I would completely disagree with that. And
less being made?
I mean,
we're just talking about how there's too much for us to play right now.
In the past 30 days, we've got Dishonored, XCOM, Resident Evil, like Mark of the Ninja just came out. Like, all of these are really hardcore games.
Sure. Fair enough.
And even like Crazy Taxi, which you just reviewed on iOS, that just came out. It's a remake, but like that game, I would still consider kind of a hardcore game. It came out on a
Crazy Taxi's not a hardcore game.
I mean, it fits in that hardcore gamer kind of history, right? It's casual now, I guess, because it's a lot easier to play. There's not a lot to it, but it's still something that looking back, we were like, oh, I loved that game, and I was a hardcore gamer who played that game and loved it.
I don't know. It's a weird term because no casual gamer sits there and goes, I'm a casual gamer.
Yeah.
No one does that. Like,
but hardcore gamers will identify that way.
Sure. But like if you tap a guy's shoulder on the bus and he's playing Angry Birds or Tiny Wings or something, what are you doing? He's not going to be like, I'm casual gamer.
Just casually.
I mean,
I'm not very hardcore about it.
The distinction here is that there's a big, big difference between Call of Duty and XCOM. You know, a game that has hardcore. Like you have a 99% chance to blow this enemy's head off in XCOM. You will miss 1 out of 100 times. Like you will miss and die. And lose the mission, and it's hardcore in that way.
Right,
like,
it's not hardcore in like the hardcore gamer term. It's like it's like legit hardcore. You have to be really into it. to kind of like, fully understand what it's going for.
XCOM is for a special type of gamer. Like, that's not a game. I haven't played it yet. I'm sure I'm going to love it. You're playing it. You're loving it. Yep. I would not recommend that game to that people. You need to be a special kind of gamer to really get into it.
Like, my dad just finished playing Red Dead Redemption in GTA 4. But like, yeah. I would
Your
never,
dad, huh? That's crazy.
I would never. Oh, yeah. He's been on a crazy Rockstar kick.
Yeah.
Loves that Arkham City.
How old is he? Does he play them on PC?
Like 45. No, he's playing it on PS3.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so
your dad is 45?
Well, Mitch is a young
48. I don't know.
I guess you're
sorry,
like,
Dad.
No, it makes sense. It makes sense.
Wow. Anyway,
I would never. Is he watching GameScoop?
Probably. Once I link it to Facebook, he'll probably click it and then like it.
I love Mr. Dyer.
So we put up an article yesterday, an interview with Trip Hawkins, founder of Electronic Arts, mm-hmm. where he basically said, you know, there's more people playing games now than ever, but there are these casual gamers. They're playing on their, you know, on their mobile devices. They're playing Facebook social games. And that he thinks console gaming will stay, but it will become a niche thing.
But like,
and the comments are very hostile.
Yeah. Well, sure.
But here's the thing: like, we're already here. There is a time when Cityville, you know, this is a Zynga game. That game had 100 million active players, and that's not some wishy-washy number. Like, they had 100 million
that's
people
crazy.
Actively playing that game. So that means games are already niche. That means Call of Duty is already niche compared to something like Cityville.
By comparison, we're still talking about like 10 million people playing Call of Duty.
Sure. Yeah.
In the grand scope of like the Earth, yeah, gaming's pretty niche. But in terms of like penetration rate and attach rate, like people per games per console, like I don't think it's going away.
But that's still, the millions of people that bought Call of Duty bought a $60 product, mm-hmm. and then they probably bought $15 map packs down the line.
And then spent God
that's
knows
a, that's
how
a fair
much
point. Like that,
there's still money getting pumped into
this.
Those 10 million consumers are much more plugged in and engaged than the 100 million people playing Cityville, mm-hmm. sure, in terms of time spent, dollars spent, you know, whatever you want to slice it.
I don't see it as a bad thing
if
games become niche. Maybe that would free up developers. You know, they've become a little bit safe. In AAA games are a little safe these days.
Yeah.
But if I think of, like, you ask me what are some niche games for this generation?
David, what are some niche games from this generation?
I would say things like Limbo.
Yeah.
Like awesome games like Limbo.
But Limbo did pretty well, which is weird.
Sold like 3 million copies.
Yeah.
2 or 3 million.
At $15 a pop. So, I mean, it is a niche game in the way that, I don't know, this is so in the weeds here, because then you get into like what's a niche game, what's an indie game. Like, you know, that was published by Microsoft,
right?
Originally?
Yes.
Literally one of the biggest companies on the planet.
Yeah, so it's weird. It's like, it's hard to make this description for me. But
I think the heart of his question is, if you want more games like XCOM, you gotta buy XCOM.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Support what you want. Like, you are, this is voting with your dollars kind of thing.
Well, we've also had the whole, like, Kickstarter thing happen in the last year and a half, which is a totally different venue now that maybe your games don't have to sell that well at stores. Maybe they just have to sell to enough people on Kickstarter.
Yep. I think about stuff like XBLA, like, that platform became a huge hit, and everybody made a lot of money. Microsoft made a lot of money, and then that platform just took off, and we got a lot of weird, sort of strange, smaller $10 games as a result. Like, if people wouldn't have bought those games when the 360 launched, like Geometry Wars or like Outpost Kalaki X or whatever other launch games.
And I would argue that, like, if those games weren't successful, we wouldn't have things like Journey on PS3.
Exactly.
Sure. In terms of that, it's a better time than ever for video games right now, because it's like back in the 90s, you'd have to go to Nintendo and you'd have to say, hey, we need to license your cart technology for $70 a pop, and we're going to make $4 back a game, and Nintendo's going to make 60 on that, and some other guy's going to make 9 or 10. Who knows? Some guy at the factory. But nowadays, you can just go, hey, we're just going to put this out digitally. And we don't have to license things. Like, Nintendo used to sue people like Blockbuster for renting their games and stuff like that. Now they just sell there was a story this week where Nintendo put all of its flagship 3DS titles on the downloadable store. And you don't even have to go into a store anymore for their stuff. So they're finally even catching on. And they're the oldest dinosaurs when it comes to this stuff. So
I mean, things absolutely, if XCOM sells well, then we'll see more stuff like XCOM. Like, that's how, like, everyone was sure BioShock was going to flop. It didn't have multiplayer. That was a time when FPS multiplayer was, like, the only thing anybody really cared about. You know, it was sort of this weird. And then that game went on to be a huge success. And now we see lots of games that are like BioShock.
Sure.
Or at least influenced by it. Like, it's sort of caused this strain of gaming to sort of come back that was gone for a while. So if XCOM does really well, sure, I think we'll definitely see more sort of hardcore turn-based.
Related, we had XCOM comes from Firaxis, who also developed Civ Revolution, which came to consoles. Do we know how that game did? I assume probably not well, because we never got a sequel.
I remember it being popular amongst like our crowd.
Right, because it was awesome.
It was really awesome.
Yeah. Go buy Civ Rev. It's like $10.
It's cheaper on iPad. It's great on iPad, too. Yeah.
So Travis's other question is, if I want XCOM to succeed, where would you say is the best place to purchase it? Amazon, GameStop, Best Buy, does it even matter?
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, that's...
I couldn't tell you that.
If you buy it digitally, you're probably giving more money directly to the...
Yeah, I would say so.
To the publisher.
think your only option right now then would probably be PC.
Who publishes XCOM?
2K.
2K. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I guess Steam still takes their cut. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Just buy the game.
Substantial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yes.
Yeah.
Buy XCOM.
Good talk, guys. Moving on.
Sure.
This is David Dominguez Gadsden. I recognize that name.
It's a good name.
Who is looking forward to Animal Crossing on 3DS after the mediocre offering on Wii? Has the Animal Crossing boat sailed, or does the franchise still have limitless possibilities? Did Animal Crossing ever really have limitless possibilities?
Yeah.
Really?
Like, why are those our two options?
Yeah.
It's either over or it's limitless possibilities.
I will say that the new Animal Crossing is the most new Animal Crossing since the first Animal Crossing, which I almost feel like they released the first game, it was brilliant, and then I was like a crackhead chasing that first hit for like years afterwards. Where every single one was just like ghostly former. It was just like
I gotta go home.
It was like, oh, let's do it. We're gonna do the skin. And like, oh man, they added this and this and this. And you got down to it. And it was really the same game with pretty much the same textures, most of the same items.
Yeah.
Like it was.
Yeah.
It was like replaying the same GameCube port, which is actually it was an N64 game originally.
Yeah, and you had to set the time manually every time you turned on your console.
And everything.
Yeah.
So it came out at a time when I was a big Nintendo fan, but I just never played Animal Crossing.
I got addicted as, can I swear?
Yes.
I got addicted as fuck to Animal Crossing.
I got addicted as motherfuck to Animal Crossing.
All right.
I was like skipping classes.
Yeah,
I
would call into work sick and be like,
and it's weird because by no means does anything else, like no other genres like this really grab me, like, or you know, games in this genre, like The Sims, I never sat back and like, I was like, oh, I got to build my house and get this guy a job.
You're so excited when you get a new dresser. You're like, yes.
I've earned it.
Dude, I was playing like a crazy person. Like, I play at 2 o'clock in the morning in real time and I'm knocking on people's doors. Like, wake up, fucking animals. Let's make some transactions. It was great. And you'd customize your own textures. You'd make your own wallpapers. Yeah. Like, it was just this fun thing. And
pulling
then,
weeds.
Yeah, and then Tom Nook was there. And he's like, where's my fucking money? Like, every time. And then, you know, now the 3DS one's great because you're the mayor now. You run the town.
Yeah.
So you're getting the rent.
I think so. I don't know. Tom Nook is probably still finding some way to get all your bells. But that's how this works. You can go swimming in it. There's an island you can visit. There's like all types of stores. It's crazy.
I had a GBA. I'm going to go to the GBA island. I would connect my GBA to my GameCube using that cable. Literally, Crystal Chronicles were like the two.
I will say that the one thing I really wish, and ever, this is such an easy thing, everyone always says this, but the NES games that were in the GameCube one were unlockable. And it was sort of like, the game was great. Animal Crossing was awesome, but there was like this underlying hunt to find them all.
It was like, now that's a very common thing for like retro games to be back. Yeah. But like back then when that first came around, we probably hadn't played those games in 20 years.
Now Nintendo's like, go visit our online store and download them all for $5 each.
Those days are never coming back. We're never getting NES games back in anime.
But yeah, Clue Land, I would never played it if it wasn't for that. And same with Wario's Woods and a whole bunch of other things.
It just occurred to me that Animal Crossing is just straight up a Harvest Moon clone.
That's not
true at all.
It's got the real time.
How did that just occur to you?
The real time clock is absolutely the hook. Because you got to get home. You got to be home on Saturday to talk to KK Slider or whatever.
Things
day
are happening
choose.
On holidays. Like you got 1 hour to listen to him play his little songs.
Yep, that was great. Man.
Yeah, but your crops and your animals don't. Your animals don't die in Animal Crossing.
I have really, really fond memories of Animal Crossing.
Me too.
So we're excited for Animal Crossing on 3DS.
What's
it called? Animal Crossing 3DS.
I totally forget.
Nobody knows.
All right. Nobody knows.
I can just see the YouTube comments now. On this, before I say what I'm gonna say, but that game would make a tremendous amount of sense on iPhone or iPad.
Yeah,
it would be incredible.
A lot of those Nintendo games, Pokemon,
Pokemon and Animal. I know. I mean, a lot of games make sense for that platform, F-Zero. But especially Pokemon.
You'd be setting 3 a.m. alarms to get up and go to the 3 a.m.
Well, because that real time element, like any game that has a real time element, it's kind of annoying. Like it's annoying to need to get back to your system and play Animal Crossing, but that exact same mechanic becomes fun when it's on your phone because you always have your phone with you.
I remember one year I ran out of the room away from my family and my ex-girlfriend on Christmas Eve to check my town to see if
why
I got
was
any
your
presents.
Ex-girlfriend? Oh, at the time she wasn't your ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
I did that too.
I dumped her and ran to Animal Crossing.
I did that too. I had to get home on Thanksgiving to get my whatever gift you get. Man, that game had its claws into me.
That's fun. And what I'm excited about the most is that a bunch of us are going to be playing it here at IGN, and that's a really good social aspect of like trading stuff in the game. So like me and Andrew Goldfarb will be playing it, Audrey Drake and from the Nintendo team will be playing it, and we'll just be trading stuff and ignoring real life.
Brian's going to be drawing like dick paintings to share to everybody.
Yes, that's what I went to art school for.
Yeah.
Dick paintings.
You gotta say that kind of sarcastically, but let's be real.
It's true.
You got a letter from Brian Altano and it says dick butt.
This is Paul Thacker. He says, I really enjoyed Darksiders 2. What a huge game. I remember you chatting before the launch about how its sales would determine whether Vigil Studios survived and maybe even THQ itself. It was the best-selling game of August. It has now moved about 820,000 copies worldwide. So is that enough to save Vigil and possibly see a Darksiders 3? Will the Japanese launch on October 18th and the Wii U launch in November make much of a difference? So that might be enough to save Vigil, but I think they said something like it needed to sell 3 million copies in order to get a Darksiders 3.
I really hate when I read stories like that. Like I think there was one about Dead Space 3.
5 million to survive the series? Come on,
it's
guys.
It's like, really? Come on. Maybe set the bar a little lower figure something out. Maybe merchandise or something.
What
sell some Isaac plushies. I don't know what
you're doing. They have Darksiders novels.
Yeah.
They're terrible.
They're awful. I haven't read them. I guess I shouldn't say that. But every single page I flipped to had something hilarious happening on it.
You ever try to read the Battlefield novel?
No.
Oh, boy.
Is it the same deal?
Oh, yeah. It's bad.
My favorite part about video game novels are when they try to like tie it a little bit too closely into the game, like the game's mechanics. Like, then he got this item, and that let him go to like this place. And you're like, what? Like, that's weird.
We have those awesome, they're called, what are they called? Those, like, the ones based on 80s and 90s NES games.
Oh yeah.
And when
you're like novelizations.
Yeah, and you're reading like the Ninja Gaiden one, and like 20 pages in, there's like a tip, but it's upside down. So you gotta turn the book upside down because it's fucking secret.
How can I decipher this?
Yeah, they're like, oh no, I'm not gonna read that yet. And they're like, all right, watch out for wolves. Like,
yeah, condors.
Yeah, thank you.
I wouldn't expect the Japanese launch to move the needle very much, but the Wii U launch could give a boost.
I mean, I would almost argue that they have as much writing on the Wii U version as they did the 360 PS3. It's part of a launch. They're obviously putting a lot of time, effort, money into this port. They're going to want to see that return. They're going to need
that return. They need to call it, do you guys sort of like Zelda? And that should be on the box title.
Do you guys sort of like Zelda 2?
Not Zelda 2, but Zelda...
As well.
Yes, as well also?
Yeah.
Again?
Do we know is it a launch day title or is it in the three-year launch window?
We played it a few weeks ago. It was in the office.
And, oh, really? You know, I didn't know.
It's the game and they move all this crazy HUD stuff to the screen and, it's doing its damn thing, but I don't know if it's going to, like, if they're like, oh man, this didn't sell enough, but everything's riding on the Wii U version right here, so.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll see.
It was a success. I know. But a sequel. We'll see, I guess.
This is Dimitri or Demetris. He's from Cyprus.
Cypress Hill?
No, just from Cyprus.
Okay.
Is that a place?
So he's gonna try to keep this short. I love movies with bad endings, where the bad guys win, everybody dies, and it's depressing.
What?
And then he puts a happy face emoticon in there.
So Demetrius is a sociopath.
He says, I've had enough of them good guys winning for the past 20 years. I've tried my hardest, for example, to get the worst possible ending in Heavy Rain. Are there more games like that, where you finish the game, but it's awesomely horrible, the bad guys win, and everything has gone south? High fives all around, Dimitri.
Can we all high five right now?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Nicely done.
It's funny you said that he tried really hard, because you have to do the opposite of that in Heavy Rain. Like, you have to really not try.
To get the bad ending?
For everyone to die, for you just like, they're like, it's like, oh, save me, I'm drowning. And
you're like, no, I'm
gonna put the controller down.
I have a favorite downer ending, but it's a spoiler.
Okay.
We're going full spoilers. For who even knows what.
So I'm gonna set this up. This is a spoiler, a game made by Valve.
Ooh.
So.
Good choice.
You're warned. Yeah. Just gonna say Half-Life 2, Episode 2.
Oh my god.
Yep. Right.
Yes.
Probably my favorite game ending ever.
But that's also
huge downer.
That's kind of a cliffhanger because there's more coming.
Yeah, so, but it's very Empire Strikes Back, like we were talking about earlier.
That's true.
And if you don't care about spoilers, it's this Eli, the guy who's been helping you the whole time. He's been like a mentor to Gordon. I mean, the dude just. He dies.
And it's, what's her name?
So unexpectedly. Alex Vance's father.
Yeah.
Like, you've been relying on him. He's taking you to the next place that, you're going to go and save the world.
He gets in a very brutal way.
It's really gross. really sad and uncomfortable to watch.
Yeah. Sucks. Yeah. And then it fades to black, and then we never get Half-Life 2 Episode 3.
Oh my god.
Nope.
You just hear Alex crying for like 2 straight minutes. It's so sad, man.
I'm getting chills right now, actually.
I
want to go play Episode 2 again. It's so good.
Did you guys finish Enslaved?
Yeah, you thought that was a downer?
I thought it, like, kind of philosophically, yeah. Because the entire time, right, like, you have this, I'm going to spoil this for you guys, sorry. I mean, I kind of don't want to, you should play Enslaved.
I played it, I wasn't that wild about it, so feel
okay,
free.
So the entire time, you have this idea that these villains are just these, like, mindless robots, and they have all this stuff, and you're trying to get to this very specific point to stop them, and you arrive, and you realize that these aren't bad people. The reason they're kidnapping human beings is specifically so that they can put them in this, like, fake virtual world where it's, this place sucks, so we're going to put you in a fake place where all of your dreams come true, where you have a family and you're happy and it's great. And it kind of presents you with this choice, like, are you going to save them, or are you going to take, are you going to let them be, or are you going to take it off their heads? What are you going to do? And then it just cuts to black.
That sounds exactly like The Matrix.
It's sort of Matrix-y.
Yeah, it's very Matrix-y.
Like, the real world in The Matrix sucks, but they still try to wake people up.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They got to eat that, like, porridge stuff. I don't even know. That's the only thing. But like, that's the thing I remember most about that movie, is he pulls the crank and then this like oatmeal comes out and it's like, ugh.
Yeah, at least, you know, maybe get a nice container for it.
I like that you remember the sloppy food, not like guns. Lots of guns.
Yeah.
Or anything memorable about
and that characters. Stupid mousy guy on the ship.
But if this guy's not playing the Walking Dead games that are out now, then that's where he needs to go, because those are just grim left.
Yeah, that story is not going to have a happy ending.
No. I'm not going to spoil say anything, but did you guys play episode 4?
Mm-mm. That's what Kim and I are doing tonight.
God damn, have fun.
So Greg wasn't as crazy about it, but you liked it.
I loved it.
Okay, good.
I think it's the best one they've done. I think episode 4 is the best thing Telltale has ever done.
Ooh. All right.
Wow.
Very, very exciting.
And there's no way, I mean, we don't know anything about episode 5, but there's no way. It's just not, there's no happy ending for these characters. It's not possible. Probably.
Final question comes from Steven Santana. This year, for the first year in about 5 years, I'm actually going to dress up for Halloween. I'm going to be Nathan Drake from Uncharted 3. I was going to go with Cole McGrath, but his jacket in the first game is unique, and I'm not a creative clothing guy.
That is a really cool jacket.
Slowly, the packages are coming in, and I can't wait to wear it to my college classes, and later on, show it off to my friends.
Just shows up for history. Hey, guys! It's Half-Chuck. It's on Halloween, dude.
No one's going to know who he is.
Yeah.
He'll have his scarf on.
They're just going to think he was on Extreme Makeover, and now he's all Metro. What are your plans for this Halloween? Are you going to wear a costume? And when was the last time you went trick-or-treating?
Oh. Trick-or-treating?
Wow. Yeah.
Like knocking on people's doors asking for candy?
Yeah, that's been a few years.
It's been quite a while I mean, I'm a 31-year-old adult male.
People knock on my door now.
Really?
Well, no, that's I'm of that age.
You're the...
Oh.
I have a door that people could have the ability to knock
You'll find
on.
Out this year.
No, I live in an apartment, so nobody. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in an apartment building, too.
I didn't mean people literally knock on my door. I just mean I've crossed that point in
Crack
my life.
Do.
Yeah,
we live in a city, and unfortunately, trick-or-treating doesn't really happen in a city.
No, people go to the mall. It's sad.
First of all, there aren't kids. And second of all, it'd be very dangerous. Yeah. And nobody has a house. So for all these reasons, you don't trick-or-treat, which is sad. I kind of miss that.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm DJing a big Halloween party at Rocket Room. If any of you viewers are in the Bay Area, you should be there on Friday, October 26th. But I haven't figured out a costume yet.
I didn't know this was happening. I'm glad I'm here for
Yes, this is happening.
I don't have one either. I'm trying to do like a couple's costume thing with my girlfriend, and she's going to dress up. She's basically dressing up as a red dress that's like a bottle of hot sauce. It's just a really slim white red dress with a little green hat. And she's like, what should you be?
You have to be a burrito.
Right, yeah, she's sriracha.
Yeah, but that sucks for me. Yeah, then I got to be in this giant burrito costume.
You just wrap a blanket around yourself. That's it.
No,
that's more of like a homeless Mexican guy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not really a food item. Hey, can I get your dude in the blanket? I'm hungry. No, that's not how that works. Can you put some hot sauce on that? That'll save it.
You have two costume possibilities, you said.
I had two possibilities for games with bad endings. With
all okay.
I have no idea what I'm doing for Halloween. Probably nothing.
Mm-hmm. My costume's a secret, but Jamie and I do have couples costumes planned.
Okay.
See, I'm not really enthusiastic about Halloween like I used to be. It just kind of happened. I don't know.
You're a jerk.
I know. I hate fun.
Halloween's the best.
Halloween's fun.
It takes time to build a costume, and I don't really want to go to a store and buy like a shitty, stupid, like fat Spider-Man costume.
No, you don't do that. You make a you assemble one yourself. Like what was the reader's name?
Steven Santana.
Like Steven Santana.
How do GameScoop listeners all have the best names?
I know.
Every single person.
It's pretty good. We're out of time this week, but Justin, you do have a notepad here.
We do. Do we have a second? We'll do one. We'll do one. We'll give people a tease for what's to come on GameScoop. So I found on Damon's desk a notebook of, you know, at various E3s or other events of notes.
This is happening now.
Of notes that that Damon had taken about games. And the thing about notes.
We were joking about this.
Yeah, we all know this in the room, but people are talking, and so you're furiously writing as fast as you can, and then afterwards your notes make no sense at all. And so we were just reading some of these, like, out of context, non sequitur quotes, and so the game we're going to play.
And so what year is this one? Do we know what year even this is?
This must have been, like, 2009.
Yeah, I think we said 2009 and 2010. Okay. I don't know definitively.
Okay.
Tilt it up. He can see he's cheating.
So we are going to, readers can play at home. I'm going to read off some notes from this notebook, and we have to try to guess what game it is. Damon, this is, and you're both welcome to chime in.
Yeah, we're all playing together here.
So, note number one, giant sword guns. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're moving.
I have an idea.
Sounds like,
We have Shebat Boss.
Shebat Boss.
Shebat Boss.
Shebat is with a dash in the middle. Shebat.
Shebat.
Shebat Boss. We have
a Sherbet Boss.
We have a cool, delicious. Cool Golem Gate.
Golem Gate?
I'm sorry, go again.
Cool Golem Gate.
Like Gollum.
Gollum.
Like
Gollum.
Like
cool Golem
guy.
Gate. Not Gollum like Lord of the Rings.
I've got it.
Do you? Is it the first Darksiders?
I think it's Darksiders 2.
No, so it wouldn't have been.
But there is
two, so, is two.
If it is 2009, then it would be the first Darksiders.
So, and I've also
the Bat Boss. Yeah. Is what makes.
So all of what you said is basically Darksiders 2 as well. So.
So we also the order I'm reading these notes, they should be getting more obvious as I go.
Okay.
So
are we correct or not?
Okay, so the final note. Hold on. The final note is Zelda for grown-ups.
Okay. Yeah. That's a really good note.
I take offense to that, but sure. This is why people always give a shit for video game journalism, because like if you found Anderson Cooper's notebook, it would be like hundreds of lives lost. And ours were like, Shebat Boss. Yeah. Journalism.
It's true, yeah. It's true. Yeah, that must have been the first Darksiders. Yeah. That would have been at Judges League in whatever, 2009,
right.
2010.
Right.
We're gonna do one more. Damon, you can't participate in this one because we talked
did this
about
one?
It.
Okay.
So this is for you two.
Okay.
Disneyland version of Paris. That's actually already a pretty good clue.
Okay.
Climbing the Eiffel Tower.
The Saboteur.
Right?
Yeah. Zeppelin service helicopters, and you write all these notes about black and white and color, and like your notes make no sense. It's like everything black and white, car color. And it's like, what?
It's like, to be fair, when we first saw that game, that's what it was like, black and white, like, whoa, it's a red car. How'd that happen?
Yeah, then it's like, solve missions, color returns to world. That's what your notebook like says right here. Brink Zeppelins, roof jumping.
That's pretty good.
Roof jumping.
That's a really helpful note.
I spent more time playing that game than I should have, I think.
I finished it.
I actually never played the final game.
Really?
It's really good.
It was
really good.
I think it's underrated.
GTA with Nazis.
Who made that game? Oh, it was
Pandemic.
Pandemic, wow.
And then they died.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was that game. That's a fun game. We'll bring that back.
We need a name for it.
We can play that.
Readers should send in
what send in.
What should we name? Name that game.
Name that.
Viewers and listeners. That's all the scoops we have for you this week, though. Remember, you can always reach us at gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon Hatfield. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.